Hello and welcome back to episode 5 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm Chris and I'm here with Kate and Kristen, and today we are going to be going over chapters 10 through 17 of Bloodline by New York Times bestselling author Claudia Gray. We decided that's the thing, right?
Yeah,
I think so. I don't think
New York Times. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I did fact check it. It's not in her Twitter bio, but I don't think that any of us actually did a Google, so. She gets to be a bestseller for another week, if she's
yeah.
not, actually.
Possibly. Oh, no, the book itself says New York Times bestseller. Okay, we're good. New York Times bestseller, Claudia Gray.
How did we fuck that up last week?
Because we're illiterate. That's why we're doing this podcast.
That's so true.
On reading and stuff.
Reading things.
Welcome to the Book Wars Pod. Since it's only episode 5, we'll go through our little spiel one more time, just in case there are any new listeners. First of all, welcome. We're glad you're here. We are going to be going through the Star Wars canon books, comic books, basically the non-movie and TV media of the Star Wars universe, and just talking about how it relates to the universe, how it adds to it, how it increases our viewing experience when we watch Star Wars, because that's basically what we're all about. And one more word of intro. This is not a spoiler-free podcast. That's why we do try to be diligent about letting you know what we're going to be talking about. As I said, today we're talking about chapters 10 through 17, but I would imagine there's probably going to be some plot from chapters 1 through 9 in there as well. So if you haven't read that far and you don't want spoilers, then now is a great time for you to turn off the podcast and go listen and go read the book instead.
And go listen to the
book.
Rest of
or listen to the book on Audible.
Oh yeah, listen to that book.
There you go.
Noted sponsor of podcasts, not including this one yet.
We have no sponsors. I know everybody who's listened to the rest of the episodes is looking for an update on my succulents. I actually am killing them, and it's not from overwatering them, but they are dying. I think it's because I only have a north-facing window in my apartment, and they weren't even in the window. And now, so I put them all in the window now, and I'm trying not to overwater them, but they all look like they're dying, so don't worry, I'll keep you updated on, this is like the first time I'm ever trying to be alive, so it's definitely gonna die 100%. Anyway, that's the side pod. If you don't get that joke, you can go listen to probably one of the other episodes.
Episode two,
sure. That was great.
Bam.
So other than overwatering your succulents, the other thing that people want to know is, what are we drinking? And I'm pretty sure I'm the only one drinking right now.
Yep.
But, no, I'm drinking.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, never mind. Well, I am drinking an Abita Tagosa Sour again.
Just ooh.
Like last time, because we just really don't drink that much beer when we're not recording podcasts, apparently.
It's so strange in my head. I'm drinking a Lime LaCroix because I have a touch of a migraine that I'm trying to get rid of. So no Rainier for me, even though it's essentially water.
Poor baby.
I'm fine. Don't feel bad for me. It's from the weather here.
No. I'm drinking some beer that one of the IT guys at my job just threw on my desk because he's always work appropriate. And I don't actually know how to pronounce the name of this brewer. It's Ashling beer, and it's called Special Drops. And it's an IPA, which I usually hate, but he's trying to get me to drink IPAs and not want to die. So that's what's going on with me today. It's also a tall boy, so I'm going to be crunk as hell after this.
Oh, yay. Mm-hmm. I'm saying yay about the IPA situation. Now it's going to be beer talk corner. How many ABVs is it, Kate?
Oh, it's only 8.5%.
Oh, shit. You are going to be drunk.
Told you.
How do you like that? That's interesting. Huh.
It's pretty okay. It's not super hoppy as far as IPAs go. So
got it. It's probably not very
a good time.
Probably not very
I believe
bitter.
This brewer is local, so.
Probably.
Yay, Virginia.
You're so good. Can you take a picture of it and send it to me later?
I will.
Sorry.
It's all good.
All right. Well, back to Star Wars. Sorry, I had no segue.
No,
Jesus,
it's a great segue.
Yeah, right. All right, so first thing I think we want to talk about is Leia. When we read our first book, Rebel Rising by Beth Rivas, we started each podcast by talking about Jyn and the ways in which we saw her differently after reading the different parts of the book. And obviously, there's a lot more history to Leia. You know, there's a lot more backstory to her even before this book. People know about her. She's in more movies, just from purely quantitative standpoint. But I think that this book really is giving us a really good view of her and a really like new view of her. And one thing that has really struck me reading, and I can't say completely struck me because Kate was actually the person who came up with this question, but is that Leia just really breaks the mold in everything she does.
Yes, so one thing I noticed about Leia's character, and this is kind of evident in the films, but even more so in the book, is that Leia's is kind of an outlier when it comes to the different roles she has in life. So obviously she's a senator, she's a member of nobility or the elder houses. If you're a Lady Carice, then you care about that shit. And as a force sensitive person, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. Anybody?
Yeah, so it comes up, I think. You guys are going to just have to yell at me if I accidentally go talk about stuff that didn't happen yet, because yes, I don't have a good idea of what that is. I should have asked before we started recording, but it's not my style.
Yep.
I think where it first showed is when Leia's having like a shit ass morning and she can't figure out like why she's having a bad morning, and then it ends up being that the Senate gets bombed, or is that like that's like one of the like Senate office buildings, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The conference center, yeah.
Cool. Sure, that thing. I'm like, what does that equivocate to in DC? Doesn't matter, Kristen. No one cares. So, and then I think she even says it, like, explicitly, is that right? She says, I don't know if it's, like, the Force or what it is, but I can tell there's, like, something going on.
Yep.
Yeah, I think she kind of did realize by, you know, once she, like, got that what was it, a napkin with the warning on it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That it was, that there was a disturbance in the Force.
Yeah.
As they say, but that was something
they do say that.
They do. I mean, they do. At least one of them does.
I thought Claudia Gray. Speaking of napkin, I thought Claudia Gray did a really good job of naming the napkin bombing, because it's some like hot bullshit that somebody would have named that on news here. We would all be like shaking our head about it. I was like, oh my god, what a stupid name.
It makes me Bombgate, because we only have one way room problems in America.
I know. Napkin gate
Ghazi.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good one. That's a good one too. Oh man. Fox News is listening to this thinking about it.
You do see, though, getting back to Leia and how she breaks the mold, she is really different, though, because like she is a Force-sensitive person in that, like, she talks about, like, Luke has tried to teach her the ways of the Force, and it didn't really work. And, you know, we have Tylan Garr asking why she didn't become a Jedi, and, like, because she felt her duty was elsewhere. But she really is an outlier, because she clearly is still Force-sensitive. She felt that disturbance in the Force. If you read some of the other books, which we will in the future, you definitely do get a sense that she can feel the Force. It's just, she's an outlier. She breaks the mold.
Agree.
I'm super fascinated by how attuned she is to the Force and just knows what it is, just instinctively, even though she's never really been trained to hone that ability. It just kind of goes to show how ridiculously strong in the Force the Skywalker family is.
Oh my god, this hoes.
Well, I mean, when your dad's the chosen one.
Oh yeah, that little detail.
Oh my god.
Two things I just wanted to talk about was that she's obviously a super respected member of the Senate. She's mentioned multiple times as the only senator who would be able to unite both parties if she were elected first senator, and she obviously feels a strong sense of duty to the Senate, but she just wants to fuck shit up. She's so feisty, and she's so ready to go into the field instead of just sitting in an office and pushing around paperwork or, you know, whatever passes for paperwork in outer space. And she's just so she's interested in politics, but she's so uninterested in the interpersonal politics, those relationships that pretty much every other politician is trying to build, because at the end of the day, most politicians are in it for a power grab. And she's just completely uninterested in that.
Yeah, Claudia Gray, not a huge fan of politicians, and particularly not centrist politicians in this book.
Neither is Anakin, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's politicians.
Anakin. He's still not sure about one of them, though.
Oh my god. You guys need to stop.
Oh my god, I'm screaming.
Okay, two things that wanted to come up that are obviously non sequiturs. You're not allowed to answer, Chris, because you read the whole book. Who do you think is responsible for Napkingate? Kate.
For Napkingate? Oh my gosh, I don't know. Seems like the Amexine Force might have had a hand in it.
Yeah.
Just because I'm wondering if maybe they're sniffing out Leia and thinking that she's getting too close to figuring out what exactly is going on there.
Yeah, that's true. But then we wonder who left the note, all of these things. Stay tuned for other plot-related things that I'm not supposed to be discussing on this podcast. And the other thing that I wanted to ask you is I don't remember as usual.
This is the quality content our listeners have come to expect.
I know. That's why I'm
so
here.
While Keeks remembers what her other non sequitur was, Kate talked a little bit about how she breaks the mold as a senator, and like you really do see that, like even as early in the book as in the first section that we read, when she like gets paired to go on this mission with Castor Foe. Is that how we decided it's
yes.
pronounced?
I read an interview with Claudia Gray belatedly, and it is pronounced Castor Foe, and I would like to apologize to our listeners who are probably facepalming somewhere, and Claudia Gray, who is probably just lying on the floor screaming, that we fucked that up. So.
Just calling Beth, like, should we be worried about these youth? Why are they podcasting about us?
Like, why did you tell me to listen?
Sorry. Anyway, Castor Foe.
But actually, though, Claudia Gray, if you're listening, that'd be awesome.
Same with Beth Rivas. Anyway, I hope you're still listening.
Anyway, so you see when she gets paired with Castor Foe that she really, like, 3PO is so scandalized because she goes to his office.
Mm-hmm.
And 3PO will not have that. And she's just like, fuck it. Let's make him uncomfortable. Let's fuck some shit up. And you just, like,
she's the best.
There always is that streak to Leia that you see. I mean, obviously in this book, but definitely in the movies, too.
Oh, I love it so much.
Like, you see, like, when we first meet Leia, like, when, or not when we first meet Leia, but when, like, Han and Luke first meet Leia in A New Hope, like, she immediately goes from being this, like, helpless prisoner, aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper, to somebody has to save our skins, let's shoot some motherfuckers and dive into a garbage chute.
Yeah.
Like, she's really, wrong? Like, she's not a normal princess.
Nope. And if you even go even further back in her timeline, in the Star Wars Rebels episode, A Princess on Lothal,
when she's
I don't know, 15 or 16, like she's 19 in A New Hope, but when she's 15 or 16, she's already elbows deep in the rebellion and bossing around the Lothal Rebels and just coming up with her own plans to just undercut the Empire, and it's pretty awesome.
It's awesome. I love that episode.
So good.
It's so good. I need to go back and watch that. I love it.
You kind of just always have this kind of disregard for the paths that have been set out for her. Like, even if they're good, like, she enjoys being a senator. Like, obviously being a princess isn't bad, and she wasn't, like, it's not like Disney princess where she's locked in a tower, like, she was encouraged to do things, but like you always kind of see her like just kind of like throwing that middle finger up to like what her destiny is or what she's supposed to be doing.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing I wanted to touch on was Lady Carice goes to her, I think in the first chapter, and says, the governor of Beeren just died and you're next in line to inherit the governorship of this planet, which is half Lady Carice wanting to stuff her away in a shoebox so that she's not in the way, and half Lady Curry's being really, really extra about haha bloodlines. and woo, and how nobility works in the galaxy, and Leia's just like, I give zero fucks about this. Like,
she's like, can you make this go away for me?
I know. She's just like, if you think it's so important, you fucking take it. Like, can you leave?
It's so funny. And she's like, can I? And Leia's like, no, really. Like, please, please do not make me deal with this.
Please never come back by.
I have real things to do. Gotta go.
Yeah, she definitely still has that rebel streak in her of, like, this is what you want me to do? All right, I'm gonna fuck off and do this instead. And, like, go hang with these soldiers and, like, talk about how Saw Gerrera did what needed to be done and just, like, do all the stuff that you don't expect from me.
Absolutely. Which is, like,
definitely adds to, like, doesn't really change how we view her in any of the Star Wars movies, which would kind of be hard at this point because we know so much about her and she's such a beloved character by herself. But, like, definitely adds to it.
I think it definitely rounds out her character. You know, she, again, she's not given a lot of space in the last two films, and especially the third one, to kind of assert her own personality. And so we always know that she's a badass, super feminist, super ready to just be on the front lines. But this really kind of cements that in a way that's really, really human. You know, she's not going against the grain just to do it. She's doing it because she has a really deeply ingrained set of principles, and she's going to follow them and fuck anybody else.
And she's obviously gone on now two missions away from the Senate, just kind of because she wants to, and she doesn't really want to wait for anybody to tell her that she's allowed to, and she's just like, how can I make this sound like I am going to go do, okay, it doesn't matter, I'm just going to go, bye, gotta go figure out what the hell's actually going on, thanks.
Yeah, totally.
Which I like, of course.
Yes. Yeah, but I don't know, one thing, Kate, that you touched on is that, like, she does have this, like, really strong, like, sense of duty, and, like, it's not that she's just like fuck all because she doesn't care, which is, like, kind of how we feel about Jin at points, but, like, she just always does have this really strong sense of duty. And I feel like, kind of going back to how she breaks the mold as a person who is force sensitive, I don't know, I kind of get the sense that her sense of duty is kind of her connection to the Force, and, like, how she, like, kind of how, like, Luke decides to go serve the Force as a Jedi and, like, do all this stuff. Like, Leia decides to do her duty, and that's just what she does with her life. And I don't know. What did you guys, see anything in that comparison?
I'm just thinking of at the end of Attack of the Clones where Padme falls out of the fucking gunship
and Anakin's
like, we gotta stop the ship, and Obi-Wan's like, no, what would Padme do in this situation? And Anakin's like, I guess she would do her duty, but I'm gonna whine about it. That's all I got.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think that brings up this really interesting piece that actually builds on my non-point earlier, now that I'm reflecting on it. But she doesn't do the duty as the Constitution is laid out for her, right? She does what she believes the constitutional duty is. Well, not what she believes the constitutional duty is, but what she believes her actual duty is as a senator, as far as, like, actually getting things done and stopping evil in the galaxy and keeping the Republic together, which I thought was really interesting. It's like nobody else is doing this. With the exception a little bit of Castor Foe, who she kind of brings into her little party. But I just think it's really interesting that she decided to, she just kind of decides to do whatever she thinks is right, which is super refreshing. I mean, that's always been true of Star Wars, but with the people around here somehow being even more incompetent than the people she was around in the other movies. I really think it's very interesting how much we get her just literally doing whatever she wants.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see that balance between her, like, like what she interprets as her duty. And like one thing that Kate was talking about in episode 4 was that she isn't really a reliable narrator in this book. Like this is the first time we're seeing a story told from her point of view, and we're seeing her decisions as right, which like obviously we all love Leia, we see them as right too, because she's the main character and that's what you're supposed to see. But like you don't see her like following all the rules, and like I don't know, this to me, like, just to get off on a like huge tangent, this to me like kind of like relates to like what kind of Jedi was Luke? Did he actually follow the Jedi teachings, or did he follow his gut? And like we'll probably find out more about that when The Last Jedi comes out this December.
Oh, it's so far away.
I know, it's awful. But so far. But like you do, there's a dichotomy in Luke's case of, and this is all complete speculation and not informed at all, so don't worry about spoilers. But is he a Jedi in the sense of he tried to find balance? Is he a Jedi in the sense that he tried to serve the light side? Is he a Jedi in the sense that he just kind of followed his gut and did what he wanted to and didn't go by all the Jedi's restrictive rules that they had back in the days of the Old Republic?
That's what his dad did.
Yeah, right?
Thanks, Jesus. But,
and so you have, like, you do kind of get this sense that he kind of follows his gut just based on watching Return of the Jedi, you know, just, like, seeing how he handles, like, his relationship with the Force, that he's not a perfect Jedi. And so you kind of get Leia in the same as her sense of duty. She just does... She follows her gut, and she follows her sense of what's right, and that sense of duty and what's right is kind of the same as Luke's in their connection to, like, I don't know if you can call hers the Force. Obviously, she's Force sensitive, but in their connection to the universe and their connection to their destinies.
Yeah. Just a sidebar, I just want to tell everybody, if they're welcome, that I didn't get Chris off on a tangent about Grey Jedi, and I'm just going to leave that right there. And go back to the conversation. Kicks.
It will happen at some point.
And Chris will scream.
I'm not worried about it.
I'm not prepared, Kristen.
No, all I was going to say was, and even in Empire Strikes Back, I mean, you see Luke leaving his training with Yoda, right? Because he's like, they're my friends, I have to go. And I think I have a feeling, I could be full of shit because I didn't, I'm not part of production for The Last Jedi for some reason. But
for some reason,
I think they're probably going to play into that a little bit, right? I mean, that has something to do with it, at least in part, if not, you know, by name, just by feeling, right? I mean, he went MIA and is off to quote find the first Jedi temple now, and that's not like totally dissimilar to when he just kind of fucked off to train with Yoda and then fucked off to save his friends. So
I mean, Luke loves fucking off. Like,
it's one of Leia his favorite things.
Leia can't even raise him on eating comms because he's out somewhere random doing Jedi research, which I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? I didn't even know you could read, you know, like what is happening?
Farmers can't read. God, inaccurate. Duh.
Moisture evaporators, something, something.
thank you.
You're so over that great point.
Station, fucking power converters.
He can read. He knows about power converters. Those have no. Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. All
right, this went off the rails.
As usual.
But I mean, I think we have kind of made our point that Leia, even though, like, this kind of goes into why she didn't become a Jedi, or at least somewhat. Maybe we'll get a little more than what she already told Tylan Gar later in the book. But, you know, we do get this sense of what kind of Force-sensitive person she is, and that she is a Force-sensitive person, and that, I think, does add to her character and change the way that we see her a little bit. And because, obviously, that's not something that we get any of in the movies. Like, we have a little bit of, you know, I've always known you. Somehow I've always known you're my brother, and I can tell Luke's alive. And her, obviously, most heartbreakingly, feeling Han's death from across the galaxy. But aside from that, though, like, you don't get a sense that she's...
Sorry. I love it when Chris brings up death as a non sequitur. Sorry, Chris.
I'm Jewish. That's what we do, Kristen.
Oh, it's so true. That's why you're so good at dealing with your emotions. Anyway.
But, like, you do, like, you don't really have a sense that she has more control over her relationship with the Force than just being able to feel things occasionally. And so this really does change that. Like, she is a much more active player in her own, call it destiny, her own timeline, her own story, than the movies give her credit for.
Well, and also she's older, right? So that, it's not totally surprising. We see that change. I mean, most of the time we see it change because of training, but I would imagine that some degree of getting used to that probably gives her a little bit more insight into what is the Force and what's the feeling and how to tell the difference. So,
oh, yeah,
I mean, obviously I want to give Leia credit as well, but I think that is giving her credit, right? Like, she's quote unquote learned to hone, you know, maybe not from, you know, a fighting perspective per se, but you know, whatever. I don't need to get into Jedi ethics with you guys because you know more about it than me. But I think she's definitely at least learned more about what she's feeling and what that is.
Right. I mean, it's definitely a pretty, you know, textbook example of experience being the greatest teacher and all that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So now I want to completely switch directions here.
My favorite.
And instead of talking about Leia, I want to talk about Leia's new frenemy.
Yep.
Friend, enemy. I don't know. Let's figure out what he is. And this, of course, is Ransom Castor Foe, who is the senator from Riosa.
Our favorite fascist cinnamon roll.
Yeah.
Our favorite. Seriously, though, our favorite fascist cinnamon roll.
I like him. Is that problematic?
He's fascinating. I love his character.
I like him a lot.
He's so much more interesting than you expect him to be when you first meet him.
For sure.
God, yeah. So many layers. He's like a fucking onion.
Layers. Sorry, that's a Shrek joke. Doesn't matter.
I was with you with the Shrek reference. I don't understand what the joke was. But anyway.
Oh, it's when, because Shrek says that he has layers. Like an onion.
Yeah,
like an onion.
I know.
Yeah, but then Eddie Murphy's character goes, oh, layers. You don't know what that says? Cake. Cake's got layers. Anyway, continue. I haven't seen that movie in so long, and I somehow still know almost every line.
The first one was great. Second one was fine. Never saw any of the others.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The first one's the only one that matters.
So Star Wars.
Sorry. Yeah.
Next episode on the Shrek Wars pod.
we should just call this Tangent Pod.
Yeah. So... yeah, this one is not so much with the connected thoughts, but back to Castor Foe, we do get much more of his. I mean, in the first section that we read, you get a little hint of the fact that he's, you know, more of a human being and that he is multifaceted. But you get much more of his backstory in this when he and Leia are talking in the garden, and I don't know. To me, it's like really impressive just how deeply he's laid out. Like, Claudia Gray didn't pull any punches here. Like, she like had a whole backstory of like who he was, what the war did to his family, how he formed his different beliefs. I don't know, it was super interesting to me.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I thought it was interesting. I don't know, I drew this weird parallel with him and Luke, actually. God, we're talking about Luke a lot this podcast. What is this, a Star Wars podcast? But, you know, when Luke says that he's never, ever, ever going to go to the dark side, I'm like, okay, that's really interesting. Great. I get Castor Foe's whole backstory, but I still don't understand how he can be like, yes, empires can be good. It was just the leadership and nothing else. I'm like, yeah, except for, like, everybody else in the whole goddamn empire was also, like, pretty evil when we're talking about, like, most of the leadership. I don't know. Did that, like, strike you, guys?
You know, it did at first, and then I think he's got this really weird view of empire in general, not the empire, where it's almost like socialism for him. You know, I think he wants the government to super take care of everybody. And when he thinks about the leadership, he's obviously thinking about Vader and how much he probably wished as a small child, like we all wish when we're small children, that when something horrible happens to you, you wish there was that one person who could swoop in and make everything right, you know, and just save you. And I think that's what he wants out of the Empire. I think he wants it to be headed by someone who can just be that person who can unilaterally make a decision and therefore make everyone's lives better instead of, you know, letting the galaxy stew in a quagmire like the New Republic Senate.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very reflective of kind of his versus Leia's pasts in a way, because like you look at Leia and she came of age in a time of order. She came of age in, you know, obviously after the Empire was created. And really her formative time was when the Empire was cracking down and restricting freedoms and killing people. And so her only association with all the pain that she experienced in her life is order, and the order, the, you know, the quote unquote order of the Empire. Where Castor Foe, on the other hand, you kind of have almost the opposite, because he said he was six when the Battle of Endor happened. So that means that most of his life, the Galactic Civil War has been raging openly, and certainly for all his life, the rebellion has existed. And so you have like all the terrible things that the Empire did to his planet, like. Theoretically, the Empire only did those things to his planet to get the resources to go to war.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. That was a really good point, Chris. Me and Kate are just sitting here thinking.
It just blew everyone's minds. But then I think he's the one who says to Leia, when they're both talking about how much they hate Vader, like he says to Leia, "You think the next Vader will arise from order. I think he'll arise from chaos." And that's kind of reflective of like, both of them kind of had shit upbringings. Like, obviously, Leia's was not as shit for the first, you know, couple decades of her life until the rebellion really hit. But, like, both of them didn't have good upbringings and have very negative experiences associated with those. And they kind of are coming, like, they kind of both make sense in a weird way.
And I think Leia also has really high hopes for democracy just because, you know, she's been a senator in some capacity since she was 14. And she sees... She saw when she was younger how much the Empire truly undermined the processes of democracy, and she's really hoping that in the absence of the Empire, that unfettered democracy will be an improvement on, you know, totalitarianism.
Yeah,
they're, like, really bad at governing. She has, so much patience. Like, she's, like, done with it, but I'm still just like, how do you have so much, like, faith in this process that you're still doing this? And she's I don't want to, and then they're like, you have to, and she's like, oh god, fuck, I have to. Like, she's she has such like a strong sense of duty that even though she doesn't believe in the way that anybody is doing anything, she's still like, okay, well, it's like better than the alternative.
I know, seriously, like, if I were Leia about 20 years ago, I would have fucked off and like been enjoying space pina coladas with my husband, you know?
For sure.
Space pina coladas.
Yep.
You're all welcome for that.
I know. Getting caught in the acid rain. Anyway, but yeah, I see that we have Anakin on here for as a person to compare Castarfo to. Castarfo? Castarfo.
Castarfo.
Oh, fuck. Did it again. Okay. But, like, obviously, yes, because we have this vision of Anakin laying in the field talking to Padme about how much he loves just leaders and rulers and people being made to believe or people being made to do whatever makes the most sense for everybody, and Padme being all, oh my god, are you fucking kidding me?
I'm sorry, yep. You said vision, and I'm trying really hard not to just, like, start screaming laughing right into my microphone.
Yeah, sorry.
Sand. Anyway, but yeah, so that's exactly.
We have this vision of Anakin's rat tail talking about how much he loves.
His rat tail is talking, yes.
I know. I thought that's why the acting was so bad.
And Castor Folk kind of having not a similar upbringing. Well, kind of a similar upbringing, though, because, like, Castorfo said that they were basically slaves in all but name.
Yeah.
And Anakin, of course, was literally a slave. And you have Anakin dreaming of being taken away by the Jedi, who are a mysterious order associated with government and power and, like, law.
Oh my gosh. Star Wars loves its heartthrob childhoods being truncated by being saved by the Force in some way. You know, it's
and also being truncated by horrible things. Well, other yes. horrible things.
So many horrible things. that's a really significant motif in Star Wars. You know, obviously you see it in Anakin, you see it in Castorfo, but you see it in Luke, just kind of growing up on fucking sand planet, and Rey, who also grew up a slave, Kanan in his adolescence. Kanan from Star Wars Rebels in his adolescence after Order 66, just eating out of garbage cans because he, you know, they don't really prepare you for survival on the in the back alleys at the Jedi Temple. You see that with Ezra, sure. who was left on his own when he was 7. Like, just Star Wars is so sad, guys.
Yeah, and like, and to kind of expand on that, you also get it a lot in people who are pro-Empire, like back when the Empire existed. You get it in, I think one good one is in Agent Kallus in Star Wars Rebels, that you, I mean, obviously we don't know that much about his childhood, but he does see the Empire and Order as like a good thing. It's not that Kallus is evil, it's that he sees Order as a good thing, and that's why when he sees the Empire for what it is, it's like this corrupt institution that's very ruthless and, you know, possibly committed genocide against the Geonosians, that's when he...
And little thoughts.
Huh?
And little thoughts, he mentions to Zeb.
And yeah, you're right. And little thoughts is his part in the genocide of the Lasats. And another one, which I won't get too into this because we have not read this book yet, and we don't really have it on our upcoming list, so don't get your hopes
up. Oh no, God, Chris is gonna put it on there.
No, not anything. We have so many things coming up on our list.
I know.
But but Will of Tarkin, who obviously people know from A New Hope and Rogue One, and he was in Clone Wars and Rebels, but he's someone who the novel by James Luceno really goes into his backstory and how he really also was kind of raised on this like really backwater planet in the Outer Rim, where, you know, it's all about like physically being a warrior and kind of like growing up in this chaos and like aspiring to order. And like, I don't know, it's a much more nuanced take on people who support the Empire than I would expect in a Star Wars book, because the Empire is obviously like always bad in Star Wars media. But like, it's a much more like, I don't agree with you, but I see where you're coming from. Sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm getting right. that as like a kind of a main theme. I mean, we talked about this in the first book, but it's very, we're getting these very, very nuanced views of people that, you know, the medium really lends itself to getting these, you know, kind of gray, is he good, is he bad? Is she good, is she bad? Especially this book. I mean, especially because we're getting these different chapters or different sort of vignettes of people, different points of view. I'm like, I don't know who's good. I mean, I think Greer's good, and I think Space Mom's good, and Corey's good, and Joff is good. I am so unsure about every other person.
Right.
Or every totally. Other being.
And if I can throw one more character into the mix whose book we're going to read fairly soon. I think his book is still on the list. But we're going to talk about Thrawn soon. And I know secondhand that he's a super great character once you find out more about his background. But I just think it's fascinating that for Thrawn specifically, also had kind of a hard childhood and also had a hard time when he joined up with the Empire, because obviously he's an alien, he's Chiss, and so he faced a lot of racism, and you can still see that in Rebels when he appears. You know, people don't really want to take him seriously. When Admiral Constantine just jerkily defies his orders, would he have done that with a human admiral? Probably not. And Thrawn has spent clearly a lot of time cultivating this image of himself as this absolutely formidable warrior, but he's also super cultured. He's interested in art. And that's kind of what Casterfo's done. He's, you know, he, we find out, is a hell of a pilot, extremely skilled in hand-to-hand combat.
And that was so metal. That was like the metalest thing.
Oh my god.
I was like, oh. And plus, like, the writing in that section was so good. I was like, oh, I can see it. I can see it. Oh, man.
I know. It was it was a fantastic action sequence. I was just, like, so excited the entire time.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously, he spent his own, you know, speaking of eating out of trash cans, he's paid his own dues doing that. But also, he knows what looks good on screen. He knows what sound bites are. He dresses impeccably. It's fascinating what he's turned himself into.
Yeah, I can't wait to find out more about him. I'm also here to. I cannot wait to read Thrawn. You guys know that. You guys know that. That's my Abby in our Slack.
That one is coming up sooner because we're trying to. Obviously, we're like 20 books late, so we can't keep up with all. We can't, like, you know, be current on everything. And Bloodline came out going on 2 years ago. But we are going to try and read Thrawn soon, I think, just because it did come out recently. There was some press around it, and we do want to try and keep things current as much as possible. You know, maybe we'll do books soon after they come out, and then intersperse some of the older books that we need to catch up on in there, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we decided on a pretty good every other, just to keep people engaged. And I think a lot of the, I don't know, because this is my first time through all of these books, but it seems like because Chris has read so many of these, because he's the best, that we're picking some good rereads. Like, I don't think any of the books that we've started so far, I wouldn't at least want to go back and reread and find some new stuff in, because all of the writing is so rich and good that, I think they're all worth a second, or if not more than that, visit.
Yeah, and then we're going to get to Heir to the Jedi, and once is enough.
Great!
I'll reread it for you guys,
ouch,
though. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that's, like, kind of the beauty of Star Wars books, though, because kind of like, obviously, the movies, which, like, I'll watch any damn day of the week.
Yeah.
Like, it is something that you want to revisit in, like, a universe that you want to come back to.
Hence the podcast.
I think that's a perfect place to end it. So thank you all for tuning in to episode 5 of the Book Wars Pod. Next episode, we've got at least 2 more episodes left on Bloodline, so if you are just joining us and you want to catch up, you have time. Next episode, we're going to be releasing next Tuesday, and we're going to be talking about chapters 18 through 23 of Bloodline, so about the third quarter of the book. Again, chapters 18 through 23. We hope that you read along with us and send us questions on Twitter through email at BookWarsPod on Twitter, BookWarsPod@gmail.com. Please subscribe and rate and review us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. We really would love you if you like the podcast. Give us a rating. It really helps people find the show and helps us keep doing the thing that we've had a ton of fun doing so far.
Also,
and
like,
don't forget, we are also on Tumblr. We are still Book Wars Pod, and our ask box is open. So please do send us your questions, your comments. Submissions are also open. Kristen and I especially love shitty Star Wars memes. So if you get any of those in your back pocket, please do zip those along to us.
Yeah, well,
absolutely.
We occasionally reblog some shit posts onto there. So you'll, if that's your thing, don't worry, me and Kate. Really, really super have you covered. Also, we have our URL now, which just kind of redirects to our central repository for podcasts. We might do something else with that in the future, but for right now, if you can't remember where to find us, you can just go to bookwarspod.com, and we'll actually come up and it'll redirect to where you can find the pods. So that's exciting for us. And also, like, we don't know who you guys are who are listening. We know we keep downloading and listening, and we know some of our friends are listening. So shout us out on Twitter. Even if you have some good constructive criticism, like stop talking about things that aren't Star Wars, we'd still love to hear from you. We will follow you back, especially if you tweet about good Star Wars stuff. or just tweet about anything good. It's a we love Twitter, so we're there to talk about extra shit all day, every day. But yeah, thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, and so from Kristen and Kate, I'm Chris, and we'll talk to you next week.
Wow, that one was weird. Good job, everybody.